Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Now, if I asked you to think of the most, notorious political thinker, someone synonymous with cynical, amoral politics, who comes to mind?
Oh, it's got to be Niccolo Machiavelli, right? I mean, his name literally became an adjective, Machiavellian.
Exactly. Ruthless cunning. People have called him the teacher of evil for, what, 5 centuries?
Pretty much. He's got this reputation.
And that's precisely why we're digging into him today. This popular image of Machiavelli as, you know, the guy who wrote the playbook for dictators, it's really stuck.
He did.
But the sources we're looking at, especially the work of the historian Quentin Skinner, they argue that view is, well, fundamentally wrong, profoundly misunderstood.
Yeah, Skinner's work is kind of like an intellectual restoration project for Machiavelli.
Okay, let's unpack this. What's the mission here then?
The mission really is to scrape away that caricature, to get past the teacher of evil thing and see the actual Machiavelli. Skinner paints him as this brilliant political realist, deeply pragmatic.
Pragmatic how?
Well, his ultimate goal wasn't just power for power's sake. It was about establishing a state, a stable one, a free one, and this is crucial, an independent one, especially in the chaos of Renaissance Italy.
Right. Context matters.
Hugely. You absolutely have to understand the world he lived in to get why he gave the advice he did.
Okay, so that context thing seems vital. Let's start with the historian who really champions that approach, Quentin Skinner. Tell us about him.
Right, Skinner. He's one of the heavyweights in intellectual history, a leading figure from what they call the Cambridge School of Political Thought.
And what makes his approach, his methodology, so different?
It's all about contextualism. His core idea is that you can't just read a historical text, like The Prince, as if it were written directly to us now, floating free in time.
Okay. So what do?
You have to put it back into its original setting. Understand the specific political mess Machiavelli was dealing with. Understand the intellectual debates happening then. What were the standard ways people wrote advice books for rulers at that time? What was Machiavelli trying to do by writing this particular book for that audience?
So it shifts the question. Instead of just judging, wow, this advice sounds evil, Skinner asks something more like.
Exactly. He asks, what political move was Machiavelli making here? Given the chaos, given what everyone else was writing, usually very pious moral advice, why did Machiavelli write something so brutally realistic?
That really does change how you read it. It becomes an action, not just abstract ideas.
Precisely. It's about purpose, about necessity, within a very specific moment.
Okay, so let's dive into that core thesis. If Machiavelli wasn't just being cynical, what was driving him, according to Skinner?
First and foremost, Machiavelli was a Florentine patriot, deeply committed to his city. His political thinking wasn't dreamed up in an ivory tower. It came straight out of seeing Florence fall apart, experience invasion, lose its liberty.
So he saw the consequences of weakness firsthand.
Bitterly so. And Skinner argues very forcefully that Machiavelli was, at heart, a Republican. He believed in civic government.
Right, but hang on. That seems like a contradiction. If he's a Republican, why write The Prince? Which seems like the ultimate guide for an autocrat.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And Skinner's answer is that The Prince is massively misunderstood if you see it as his ideal blueprint.
So it's not.
No. Skinner argues it's a very specific emergency manual. It's advice for a new prince, someone trying to build a state basically from nothing in a really hostile, unstable situation. Think of it like extreme measures for an extreme crisis.
Okay, like political chemotherapy maybe? Necessary but harsh?
That's not a bad analogy, actually. It's bitter medicine. But his real long-term vision for a healthy state, that's not in The Prince.
Where is it then?
It's in his other major work, The Discourses on Livy. That's where you find his sustained argument for republicanism, for liberty, for citizens participating, for the rule of law.
So, The Prince is the emergency room. Discourses is the plan for long-term health.
That's a great way to put it. And linking both books, understanding his whole thought, really depends on grasping three key concepts he uses.
All right, let's have them.
Okay, first is virtu. And crucially, this does not mean moral virtue, not goodness.
Right. So what is it?
It's more like effectiveness, skill, talent, courage, boldness, the ability to impose your will on events, political competence, basically.
Got it. Number two.
Fortuna, fortune, luck, chance, the unpredictable stuff, the chaos you can't control, the random events that can wreck even the best plans. Machiavelli thought maybe half of life was fortuna.
Okay, skill versus luck.
Yeah.
And the third one connects morality and politics.
Yes, necessitas, necessity. This is the big one, maybe. It's the idea that circumstances can force a ruler to do things that are, well, morally wrong by conventional standards, simply to save the state.
Mantenere lo stato, to maintain the state.
Exactly. That's the highest law in Machiavelli's political universe.
Mm-hmm.
The survival and security of the state override personal ethics when push comes to shove.
Now, you mentioned Machiavelli wasn't just thinking these things up. He had practical experience. 14 years as a diplomat for the Florentine Republic, right? From 1488 to 1512.
Yeah, that was his real political education. He was constantly traveling, meeting kings, popes, military leaders, seeing how power actually worked across Europe.
And was there one experience that really shaped his realism?
Oh, definitely. His encounters with Cesar Borgia, the Duke Valentino, son of Pope Alexander VI. Ambitious, brilliant, and utterly ruthless.
Machiavelli was kind of fascinated by him, wasn't he? Saw him as the perfect example of this new prince needing virtù.
He really did. He saw Borgia act with incredible decisiveness, that virtù. Like the famous incident at Sinigalia.
What happened there?
Borgia suspected some of his key captains, his military commanders, were plotting against him. So he invites them to Sinigalia for a friendly meeting, lures them into a trap, and has them all strangled on the spot. Just like that. Cold, efficient, decisive.
Okay, wow. That's chilling. How could Machiavelli admire that, especially if he was a Republican?
It wasn't the cruelty itself he admired. It was the effectiveness. Borgia identified a threat, acted decisively, and eliminated it to secure his power and bring order. It was necessita in action, removing a danger to his state-building project.
Still sounds pretty cynical, though.
It is. But remember the context. Chaos, betrayal, constant warfare. For Machiavelli, Borgia's actions, however brutal, served the higher goal of creating stability where there was none. But even Borgia wasn't immune.
Right. His downfall wasn't about lacking skill, was it?
Not at all. It was pure bad luck. Fortuna. His father, the Pope, who was his main backer, died suddenly. And at the exact same time, Borgia himself got incredibly sick, nearly died.
Terrible timing.
The worst. His power base just evaporated overnight. And that was a huge lesson for Machiavelli. Even the greatest virtue can be undone by sheer chance. You control what you can, but Fortuna always gets a vote.
So after the Republic collapsed in 1512, the Medici came back, Machiavelli lost his job, was even tortured. Then he sits down and writes The Prince. What tradition was he pushing back against?
Well, what's really fascinating is how The Prince just completely demolishes the standard way people wrote advice books for rulers back then. These were called Mirror for Princes books.
And what did they typically say?
They basically told princes to be good Christian rulers, you know, be merciful, keep your promises, be generous, be truthful, live up to all the classical virtues.
And Machiavelli thought that was bad advice.
Worse than bad. He thought it was dangerous, completely unrealistic. He famously said, "You have to look at how men actually live, not how they ought to live. The effectual truth of the matter," he called it.
Because people aren't actually virtuous.
In his view, no. He saw people as fundamentally selfish, fickle, ungrateful, easily deceived. So if a ruler tries to be perfectly moral all the time while everyone else is playing dirty, that ruler is heading for ruin.
So survival sometimes means acting immorally.
Exactly. He says, "A prince who wants to survive will often be forced by necessita to act against faith, against charity, against humanity, against religion. Politics has its own rules, separate from personal morality."
Which leads directly to that infamous advice about appearances, doesn't it?
It does. He says, "A prince doesn't actually need to have all the good qualities, mercy, honesty, piety, but it's absolutely essential that he appear to have them."
Be a great actor, basically.
A great pretender and dissembler, in his words. Reputation is crucial for control, even if the reality behind the scenes is quite different.
Okay, and this brings us to maybe the most famous or infamous question. Is it better to be loved or feared?
Yes. His conclusion. If you have to choose one, it's much safer to be feared than loved.
That just sounds so bleak about human nature.
It is pessimistic, no doubt. But again, he frames it pragmatically. Love, he says, is held by a chain of obligation, which people, being self-interested, will break whenever it suits them. But fear. Fear is maintained by a dread of punishment, and that never fails. It's a more reliable tool for keeping people in line. It's about controlling the masses, not about personal relationships.
So if The Prince is this kind of emergency realist manual for founding or saving a state in crisis, where does the Republican Machiavelli, the idealist, show up more clearly?
that's where you absolutely have to turn to the Discourses on Livy. This is the longer, more reflective work where he lays out his real political preferences.
And what does he argue there?
Unequivocally, he argues that republics, governments involving the people, are superior to principalities ruled by one person.
Why superior?
Several reasons. He thinks they're generally more stable in the long run. They're more adaptable because they draw on the wisdom of many, not just one. And they're better at achieving real civic glory and strength because they harness the collective energy of the citizens. People fight harder for a state they feel part of.
And analyzing the Roman Republic, he came up with an idea about conflict that was, well, pretty revolutionary, wasn't it?
Totally counterintuitive for the time. The standard view was that social harmony, everyone getting along, was the ideal for a stable state. Unity is strength, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But Machiavelli looked at Rome and said, hold on. He argued that the very greatness and liberty of Rome came from the tension, the managed conflict between the nobles and the common people, the plebeians.
Conflict was good. How?
Because when that class struggle was channeled through good laws and institutions, it meant neither side could completely dominate the other. It created a balance of power that guaranteed liberty. It prevented tyranny. So for him, ordered conflict wasn't a weakness. It was actually a source of vitality and freedom.
Wow. Okay, that really does flip the script. So if we pull back and look at the big picture Skinner is painting, what are the major revolutionary contributions Machiavelli made to political thought?
Well, I think the first huge takeaway, the one that shocked everyone, is the divorce of politics from conventional morality. He's really one of the first major Western thinkers to say, look, politics operates by its own set of rules, and those rules are not the same as Christian ethics or personal morality.
The goal is different.
The goal is different. The ultimate justification for political action is the security, the stability, the glory of the community, the state. And that might require actions that are personally reprehensible.
Which leads to the second point, the primacy of the state.
Absolutely. Mantenere lo Stato. Maintaining the state, that is the ultimate benchmark. Every action a ruler takes has to be judged against that standard. Does it help preserve and strengthen the state? Even an act of cruelty, he argues, can be well used if it achieves decisive stability and prevents greater chaos down the line.
It's a consequentialist ethic, focused only on the outcome for the state.
Pretty much. And the third core element is his relentless realism over idealism. He just insists on looking at the effectual truth of the matter, as he puts it. Forget wishful thinking. Forget how people should be. Look at history. Look at how people actually behave, which, in his view, is often selfish, short-sighted, and unreliable.
Ground everything in observation, not ideals.
Yes. That empirical, observational approach is really the foundation for a more modern, secular political science.
It's definitely challenging stuff, and some of his phrases are just so memorable, they really stick with you. This is where it gets really interesting, hearing it in his own kind of words.
Yeah, he had a way with words.
Okay, take his point about idealism being dangerous, he says. For how we live is so far removed from how we ought to live, that he who abandons what is done for what ought to be done will rather learn to bring about his own ruin than his preservation.
Hmm. That just cuts right through any utopian thinking, doesn't it?
Mm.
Deal with reality or reality will deal with you.
And then the classic on power dynamics. It is much safer to be feared than loved if one has to lack one of the two.
Stark. But again, for him, it was just a practical calculation based on observation. Fear is a constant. Love is fickle.
And finally, this one speaks to the difficulty, the trade-offs of leadership. In all human affairs, one notices, if one examines them closely, that it is impossible to remove one inconvenience without another emerging.
Yeah, that's the tragic dimension, isn't it? There are no perfect solutions in politics.
Yeah.
Every choice has downsides. Every fix creates a new problem somewhere else. It's a constant balancing act.
So taking all this challenging realism, what does it actually mean for you listening today? How can we apply these, frankly, quite harsh insights from 500 years ago?
Well, think about leadership in any organization today. A CEO, a manager, anyone in charge. Sometimes they face horrible choices, right?
Sure. Layoffs, unpopular strategy shifts.
Exactly. Those decisions can feel like acts of cruelty to the people affected. But Machiavelli's concept of necessita helps us understand, maybe, that sometimes those hard calls are driven by the need to preserve the organization itself. The company's stato. It doesn't make them good, but it frames them as potentially necessary for survival in a tough environment.
It separates the decision from the leader's personal morality in a way.
It can, yeah. And it highlights that authority sometimes needs to be grounded in more than just being liked. Respect, maybe consequences, not just affection.
Okay, what about on a more personal level?
I think the Virtue and Fortuna model is actually quite useful. Think about your own life or career. There's so much you can't control, right? Market crashes, pandemics, random luck, that's Fortuna. It's always out there.
Right, the chaos factor.
But Machiavelli says, okay, you can't control Fortuna, but you can control your virtue, your skills, your preparation, your resilience, your boldness in seizing opportunities when luck does shift your way. It's about focusing on what you can influence your own competence and readiness.
Be prepared to ride the wave when it comes.
Exactly. And finally, Machiavelli offers this incredibly powerful lens for just analyzing power dynamics anywhere. In the office, in international relations, wherever.
How so?
He teaches you to be a little skeptical. Look past the stated intentions, the nice speeches. Ask, what are the actual effects of this policy, this decision, this person's actions? Who really benefits? How does this move serve to maintain or increase the power of the individual or group involved? It's a critical thinking tool.
So, wrapping up, what's the big takeaway for you from Skinner's rereading of Machiavelli?
For me, it's that Skinner really does rescue Machiavelli from being just this one-dimensional villain. He shows you the patriot, the republican, the deeply engaged thinker, grappling with terrible realities. He wasn't promoting evil for fun. He was dissecting how power works in a fallen world.
Yeah, he feels much more complex, less of a caricature.
Yeah, definitely. And his huge contribution, really, was laying the groundwork for modern political science by separating politics from theology and traditional morality. He made it possible to analyze the state on its own terms.
Creating a new framework where political success, stability, glory is the measure, not personal virtue.
Right. Which leaves us with a really provocative thought, I think, is that fundamental tension Machiavelli identified still the central dilemma of politics today. Meaning, is it still true that sometimes achieving a collective good, like liberty, security, prosperity, requires leaders to use means that are, by conventional standards, amoral? Deception, force, ruthlessness. Is that still the tragic trade-off embedded in all effective political action?
That's a heavy question to end on. It certainly makes you think about the pressures and choices leaders face, doesn't it?
It really does.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.